Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, October 10th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5 hours and 10 minutes or so. We're going to cover all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here for our Tuesday show. Our guest is Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com with our Hunting for Winners segment. Once again, just recording a full hour with him. Lots of games to talk about on the college football side, so that's exactly what we did. Not as many listener questions here this week. Touched on a couple from last week since we didn't have Cheetah on the show. But lots of good game breakdowns and some analysis of the line moves that have happened out there in the marketplace early on in week 7. As far as what's going on over at bangthebook.com, make sure you're heading over there every single day. We've got tons of great stuff going on. Working on some game preview stuff for college football and the NFL. We got Parker Michaels' NHL picks every day over there. I'm doing a lot of MLB playoff stuff. I'm previewing the Indians-Yankees games, previewing the entire day with my picks analysis piece. Then once we get into the ALCS and the NLCS, I'll write up some series previews for those. Of course, going to be a short turnaround time if we wind up going 5 games in any of these series here. But you can check that out over there at bangthebook.com. Don't forget about our contests page. Lots of great stuff over there. You sign up with your email address. You'll get a daily newsletter, but you'll also be able to win cash prizes for the top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won, daily streaker, and daily or monthly pick of the day. So lots of contests you can get involved in over there, win some cash prizes. Again, we just send you a newsletter. That's it. We don't spam you with anything else. We just want you to be aware of our content and to get involved and see if you can win some things over there at bangthebook.com. Finally, our sportsbook review section is over there. We've got write-ups on all of the major names out there in the industry, some that you know, some that you may not know. We've got exclusive promo code offers for all of those sportsbooks over at bangthebook.com. Of course, if you sign up over at DSI Sportsbook using the promo code BTB and the number 25, you get a $25 free bet just for signing up, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. So if you want to take advantage of that, we certainly recommend that you do. And again, we talk about it all the time here on the show. Getting half points, getting reduced juice, all that stuff matters so much, not just for college football and the NFL, but now the NHL is going on, which is obviously a money line sport. You got the NBA and college basketball coming up as well, where those half points and those full points really, really matter. You know, we'll talk with Cheetah here during this segment about buying points, get his thoughts on it. And, you know, a lot of times you don't have to buy points if you have multiple outs at your disposal. So you can shop around for the best prices, whether it's on game day or early on in the week. So definitely make sure you've got, I would say, at least a minimum of 3 or 4 sports books available to you. If DSI Sportsbook is one of them, that's great. If you use Five Dimes or Bet Online or Bovada or Bookmaker or MyBookie or any of the other ones that are out there, you know, I just want to set our listeners up for success here. And I want to stress the fact that you need to shop around for the best prices that are out there. So we recorded this week's Hunting for Winners segment with Sports Cheetah. Good to get him back on the program here today. Like I said, we had a couple of listener questions at the outset, but mostly focused on breaking down some games here for week 7 of the college football season. So without further ado, here is this week's Hunting for Winners segment with Sports Cheetah. I'm joined now by Sports Cheetah for this week's Hunting for Winners segment. Sports Cheetah, of course, from WagerTalk.com. Preston, how's it going, man?
I'm doing well. It's good to be back. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, good to get you back here on the show. And Colin Wilson did a great job pitch hitting for you last week. I know he's a guy that you're very familiar with. So, you know, thanks for passing that along and letting me know that he would be able to take a couple of spots there for you. But good to get you back on the show here. And lots of things to discuss here as we head into week 7 of the college football season. I do want to circle back to a couple of listener questions from last week that, you know, obviously you weren't able to answer because you weren't on the show here. But the first one was about buying points and whether or not there's ever a time when buying points makes sense. And I know that you're a math guy, so I figure you're a perfect person to ask this question.
Yeah, I don't ever buy points unless you can get, you know, buying on or off of a 3 or a 7 for -120 or better. And back in the day, that used to be like you just buy any half point for 10 cents and, you know, people sharpened up, meaning the books did. And, you know, they'd make you pay, like, I think generally now, I think it's like -130 to get down to like a 3 or a 7. Generally, there's maybe like 1 or 2 places in town. 3 still expensive, but they'll offer a 7 -120. I believe there's like 1 spot. most everyone, and for a reason, doesn't do that anymore. So if your book, or you have like a local or credit shop, because offshores, I don't think they let you do that either for that cheap. So if you have one that does, that's technically mathematically ahead. But otherwise, buying like, you know, 5.5 down to 5, it's never ahead. And, you know, people probably wonder more on like the other key-ish numbers, like 10, maybe 14 or 17 or something. And I never have bought it on or off of those numbers. And I haven't seen any math or historical data that backs it up. So I never, ever have. I mean, someone maybe listening has got my plays for years. I'd actually be interested to see if I've ever sent out a play and said buy a half point or something, or buy a full point. So I'm confident I say that of, you know, hundreds and hundreds of plays now. I don't think I've ever recommended to buy a point. So I just wouldn't do it. And unless you can find, and there's a reason you can't really find them anymore, a place offering, you know, the 7 and 3 for a discount. And by discount, I mean just 10 cents at -120.
What about in other sports? I know that we're framing this question here from a football standpoint. Is it something you do in basketball, whether it's college or the NBA?
No, I don't. And it's interesting. I don't buy points like I'm saying now, but in the grand scheme of things, if you're, this is what's interesting, philosophically, technically buying points or teasing games or money line parlays can all be plus EV and mathematically correct. You could buy, you know, a half point to 10. So you're getting a dog at +10, -120. And, you know, if it closes 9.5, then it's not ahead mathematically. But if that game closes 7 and you're holding 10 at just -120, that's a very, very nice edge. So technically buying a half point there is fine because -120 at 10 is still ahead of the close. So it's still, when it all comes down to it, dependent on how ahead you are versus the market close, right? So it technically, when people talk about, they'll never buy points like I just did. If you're buying them and you're beating moves by 3 points anyways, then I guess you're actually ahead. So it really is ultimately dependent on that. And same with like teasers. I'll be honest, I bet one teaser. I think I bet 3 now on the year in college. And I bet one Saturday, and I bet Colorado State when they were -8, I brought down to 2. And Utah was +5.5, and I took it up to 11.5. And it was a +100 6-point teaser, which covered some key numbers, especially the 7 and the 3 with Colorado State. And, you know, sure enough, Colorado State ended up closing, I think, 10.5, and Utah got down to like 3. So I ended up having each leg, even though I bought 6 points, each leg was actually worth 8.5 versus the market close. So even if you didn't think it was like a plus EV teaser, like from the math standpoint, you know, right when I bet it versus where the close is, to buy 8.5 points on each side would cost you more like -140, and I got it for +100. So then that was like a really nice plus EV teaser. And so I think it goes both ways for buying points or for teasers. It really is ultimately dependent on how confident you in that you have that you are that you'll have the best number when it comes down to it, when the market's closing or at least getting close to that point. And so I guess I'm glad I thought of that, or you asked that follow up question, because you know, basketball, football, whatever it is, I don't do it. Generally, I'll do some teasers occasionally, but ultimately whether or not they're going to be plus EV is going to be dependent on where that line ends up. And if you're making bad bets, you know, whether you're teasing buying points or betting them straight and they're moving against you, then they're going to be bad no matter what. If you're, you know, beating numbers, then they're probably going to be good either way. So it's ultimately still dependent on that and how, you know, quote unquote sharp or correct you are in making your bets, whether you're buying points or not.
Well, and a lot of this has to do with risk profile and bankroll management and how you want to approach those things. So that kind of segues into another listener question we had from last week. And again, these are lines from last week, but I wanted to bring up this example to get Cheetah's thoughts on it a little bit. Had a listener that got Florida Atlantic at a pick'em, and then that number wound up going to 3.5 when the question was asked. So line was picked, then it was -3.5. And the question was whether or not to buy back or look for the middle there with a 3.5-point line move. So I think I probably know what direction you're going to go in terms of this answer, but, you know, if you've got a 3.5, you know, point move where you've got a key number of 3, or even if it gets to 4.5 and you've got 3 and 4, is that an automatic middle shot for you?
No, it definitely isn't. I actually think I'd end up getting up to five for that game's sake. So hopefully he didn't do it, or at least he waited. It didn't end up mattering. Florida Atlantic covered pretty easily all the numbers. So it's tough for people to do this, and I got caught up doing it way too often back in the day, I think, especially with like some bet online openers that used to just be so soft, even just 3, 4, 5 years ago. And I would just take, oh, well, it's moved 9 points, and I have two or three pretty nice numbers that I could land on, and I have to just take middle back. It ultimately depends on which side you like or is correct, and you really need to think of them as independent events, especially. I'm not sure when he bet Florida Atlantic pick. It must have been early in the week, or maybe it was I don't think it was a game of the year, so it must have just been like the bet online opener. If you bet pick and it moves up to 3.5, 4.5, the only reason you're betting the +3.5 or +4.5 is because you don't like the Florida Atlantic side, or you like Old Dominion as an independent event. Now you pretend like you don't have pick with Florida Atlantic. Would you bet Old Dominion +3.5? No, probably not. So then you shouldn't be doing it just because you have a really good number in Florida Atlantic pick. So I think you really have to just treat buybacks and middles as independent events. And if you liked Old Dominion at 3.5, but you knew, for example, that the market was going to be on Florida Atlantic and it was going to move up, then great. Now you have a nice middle, and you have the ability to bet Old Dominion at that point. But if you didn't like Old Dominion, then why are you even bothering? So that's generally what I would say is don't do it unless you're a real position or you're strongly, I guess, leaning, whatever it could be, on one side. And if that's the case and it requires a buyback, then go for it. But yeah, I would generally just hold on to a ticket that more often than not, it's going to cash, and you have a good price at pick when the current market's 3.5 or 4.5.
Now, I know some people will say you don't buy back all of it. You don't buy back the full unit that you got at pick. Maybe you play a half unit back the other way to kind of limit your exposure a little bit. And then, of course, if you hit the jackpot, you'll pick up a unit and a half there. What do you think about that? Because you just said that you should be treating it as an independent event. So if you want to go for it, do you recommend just, playing that full unit, or do you subscribe to the idea of, don't cost yourself all of the profit on a good number?
Yeah, I've done that too, where I only play back like half or something. And I'll do that a lot in when I'm betting in game, where I'll have, what's an example? I had a really good under bet in the Louisville North Carolina State game, I believe, just last week. The under was good by, I don't know, I had like a 9 point middle, I think is what it ended up being. And it was evident towards the end of the third quarter that there were too many drives that stalled or had a turnover, and I feel like I was fortunate that my under bet was looking good at the time, and it also was going to kind of pick up because Louisville was trying to come back and they were going to play a little faster, and they really just couldn't stop defensively. They couldn't stop North Carolina State and get off the field. So I ended up buying back on over and did it for the full amount, because at that point I actually kind of liked over. I think it was a 50.5 live, and I had bet under 59.5 or something earlier. So I played back over for the full amount. But yeah, if it was like, oh, I still like under and I still like the way that the pace is going, but I wouldn't mind taking a shot at a middle, then maybe I'd do a smaller amount. But ultimately, it all, again, just depends on, like, look at it now as an independent event. Do you like over 50.5 at that point, and for how much? And for me, it was, I would have, a full unit on over 50.5. And it was sitting on a middle actually until late in the fourth, and they ended up giving up a touchdown to NC State one more time at the end. And I think Louisville, it was a pick six is what it was actually, to go over all the numbers. So I ended up missing the middle, but I saved money playing back. But I just, again, I would just stress whether it's buying back half or a third or all of it. It just treat it as an independent event. And how much would you bet on that number and that team at that moment in time?
All right, well, let's take a look here at week seven specifically. We're going to run through several games here on today's show. But before we do that, Preston, I do want to touch base with you on this. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, conference play now. Are there any adjustments that you make to being in the conference play portion of the season? In terms of your power ratings here, I mean, are they getting more efficient relative to what we're seeing in the opening lines of the market?
What do you mean exactly from the opening line? You're saying, like, are my power ratings lining up with the openers more?
Yeah. I mean, are you finding smaller edges, from your power ratings to the openers?
I think it's probably still a little similar. I think overall, the closing market has been a lot closer to where, for the last week especially, was the first week where I thought I didn't make too many adjustments to my numbers going into this week, because most of the closes were around where I had them anyways. But that's still, there were still a bunch of moves throughout the week. And I think I bet 14 sides and only, I think one went against me, one or two stayed around the number. And then I think I was ahead of like 11 of the games or something. So I was ahead of a lot of the moves that ended up closing closer to where my number was. And so, yeah, I would say the openers and stuff, there's still some edges to be had versus my numbers. But I would say my numbers have lined up now most with the market closes last week more than any other week. So, you know, just adjusting week to week through the year, it's I think, at least probably the most accurate as far as numbers go at this point. But then again, I bet a game yesterday. I won't say which one, but I thought it was low. I bet it and actually went the other way, point and a half. So maybe not. Maybe not. We'll see. But, you know, for the most part, I feel like my numbers are a little bit more efficient than they were, you know, each week as the season's gone along, and last week now being, I think, the most efficient yet.
So what do you think of this week's card overall? I mean, I feel like there have been some pretty interesting line moves, some on games that we'll talk about, some on games that we won't necessarily talk about here. But, you know, do you feel like we're getting to a point now where we have a pretty good idea of who these teams are and you have a pretty good idea of where these numbers are going to go?
Yeah, I think so. So I went and bet five at the Wynn when they opened numbers here in Las Vegas. There were some other ones I touched I bet online, you know, an hour before that. I probably hit like seven there, and then five of them were still available at the Wynn. And I was able to give four of those out to clients Sunday evening. So once they opened at Bookmaker and Pinnacle and Five Down, everywhere offshore, one of them, which was Memphis -3, which is a game I think we're going to talk about anyway. My -3 is kind of like, you need that, in my opinion. It's kind of the buying tip, but the point, whatever. So at -4, -4.5, it's a pass. So if it gets down to three again, then I think that's a good buying point for people listening that want to keep an eye out on that line. But the other four, yeah, I think it was in general pretty good card. I think my volume as far as like openers and hitting numbers earlier, because they are a little bit sharper than they were, say, week one or week two, goes down. But then I really dive in over the next few days into like every matchup and, you know, how like all the situational stuff and just reading up on prep and coach stuff and maybe game planning for each matchup and really digging in more to the box scores and numbers from this Saturday and how the teams played and any injury reports. And once you do that, then I usually end up coming up with like 8, 9, or 10 more plays by the end of the week. So for the openers, I would say actually only hitting five at the win was actually, I could just tell you right now, I had it up. I was doing some accounting earlier. That was the least amount of games I've hit at win. It had been like 6, 8, and 6 at the other weeks I'd gone. So yeah, I guess in general, as far as that goes, it kind of goes with your other question too. Maybe the openers are a little sharper too, as the season's gone along or progressed.
All right, well, we've got a long list of games to talk about here. This one isn't on the list, but I just want to get your take on the line move, because we actually talked about this one a little bit on Monday's show, and I'm sure we'll talk about it as we go throughout the week here. This Texas Tech-West Virginia move kind of surprises me a little bit. I mean, this is one, in terms of my initial power ratings, that went way against my number, and I was actually pretty surprised by it, to be completely honest with you. But this one opened 6. It's down in the 3, 3.5 range now. The 3s have a little bit of extra jujuice. The 3.5s are flat or -0.5. This is one that did surprise me a little bit, though.
Yeah, it's interesting because Texas Tech, the last I could pull up their schedule here. They I've bet against them a few weeks in a row. I bet against them against Houston, and Houston was starting Allen at quarterback and couldn't score. And that ended up just being a pretty bad bet despite Houston actually coming back. But it was one where I'm pretty sure I laid like – it was like 6 or something, and it got up to 7, 7.5. So it was like technically the market went my way. The next week against Oklahoma State, I thought was a great spot. Oklahoma State off the loss, much better offense. You know, Texas Tech's defense isn't like good yet. I mean, they're not that great. Their offense is still decent. And we were at least like 8.5, and it got up to 11 or so when it closed. So again, the market was with me. It was against Texas Tech. In that game, Oklahoma State got inside the Texas Tech 10-yard line, 12 out of their 13 drives, and managed to not score very many points. They only won by 7. They were inside the 4 5 times, and they kicked field goals 5 times inside the 4, first and goal on 4 or less. They had to kick 5 field goals, and they missed 2 of them. So as you can see, if they just would have made one of those or gotten a touchdown on one of those, would have covered. So that one I was fuming. I was like, but that was like the dead right side. I still don't think Texas Tech's very good. Then here again, I'm like, wow, against Kansas, the number I can get 17.5. And so I bet Kansas, right? And it got down to 14. It was like way ahead there on the move. And Kansas was about going down early fourth quarter to cut it to 9. And there was like a 85-yard fumble 6 the other way. And now they're down 23. And then it picked 6, I think, right away again. And it was like 30. And then the game was over. So again, I still feel like Texas Tech isn't very good. And the number, yeah, I'm surprised by the move down, to be completely honest. And if you look at the box score in the West Virginia TCU game, I was on West Virginia. I bet some money line. They dominated TCU. They lost the game because of a punt, because his teammate was an idiot and blocked the TCU player into him as he's trying to get the punt. So it was legal, and he fumbled it, and they gave TCU a touchdown. And there was, I think it was one other turnover that led to a TCU touchdown. And it was the two turnovers there that literally, I think, cost TCU that game winning outright. And they had a chance. They tied it up late in the game. They had a chance to win anyways. So I actually think West Virginia is with Greer at quarterback, and defensively they've just been better than what people had expected coming in this season. They're one of the teams I severely underrated entering the season. Luckily, I never bet against them like in season win totals or anything. I respected them enough to stay off, but they're a really good team. And now home against Texas Tech, and it's only, you know, 3, 3.5. I definitely think that's short at this point.
So what goes through your mind when you see that? I mean, I don't know what your number is necessarily. I kind of presume by the way you're talking, it was probably somewhere in the 6-7 range, kind of where it opened. So what goes through your mind when you see a game? You know, I mean, these are numbers guys that are grabbing these. It's not like this is public money or anything like that. You know, these are numbers guys with some influence early on in the week, softer lines. There's not a whole lot of handle out there. What comes to your mind when you think about this? I mean, do you just go ahead and play it and not worry about it?
Well, this is what's weird is, I mean, you try to think through, which I kind of did just now, you know, talking through each of these games. And on the flip side, I mean, West Virginia, we bet plus 14. I'm pretty sure that got down against TCU to 11 or 12. It moved a few points their way. So the market and, like, the real money's been behind West Virginia, and they've been anti-Texas Tech for, like, 3 weeks running. So then this move going the other way, it kind of is fishy to me. Maybe screams set up or something. But you can't really, you know, you shouldn't be betting or gambling, oh, this is a setup, I'm going to take the -3. I mean, you still have to be confident in your numbers. And if you have it at 7, let's say, getting a -3 or -3.5 is definitely worth a bet. So you kind of have to be confident, look into it, like, you know, think through things, analyze how their games and markets have been each week. But this is one, if I had a guess that comes up, but I mean, you're right. I mean, people that are betting these earlier aren't really doing it. You know, it's not like the public people betting $50-$100 a game. It's usually guys hitting it for the limit because they're, you know, doing number stuff or setting something up, which maybe we already saw once it got pushed down to 3. It looks like it's come back up now to 3.5. And maybe you end up seeing it get back, you know, driven back up to 6-7 down the road this week. It'll be an interesting one to follow for sure. It's kind of been an early week head scratcher.
All right, let's look at some of the games here I did send over to you. And let's start Friday night with Washington State and Cal. And this is a brutal spot for Washington State. And I think that's a little bit of the reason why this number has come down a bit. It opened 14. There's 114 out there on the board as we're recording here Monday evening. That's at Bovada. So that's not really a big surprise that they're holding on to the 14. Everywhere else, pretty much at 13. There's a 13.5 at Greek. Heritage got a 13.5. But predominantly this number here is 13. And you know, it's a challenging situation because Washington State is very good. Defensively, they've been exceptional. Offensively, we know what Mike Leach's teams can do. Cal is clearly the inferior team here. Spot does favor Cal, though. So, you know, how do you put the pieces together of a game like that here for a Friday night?
Yeah, this is one I actually did bet yesterday. So it opened, it was, actually don't know, I think it opened 13.5 at BetOnline, and he got bet up to 16.5 for whatever reason. And I'm pretty sure the 16.5 was like plus 100 on Cal, the dog. So I bet that, which was only, just a couple hundred bucks that I could get down. But then I went to the win and bet plus 14. That was kind of my buy point, was down to 14. And then I got some at Chris when it opened there at 15. So this is actually one of my favorite plays this week. Friday night game, good spot. Cal's defense is phenomenal. And I've talked about it, I think, before on the show with Wilcox coming over from Wisconsin. I think we kind of predicted it before the season started. It just wasn't, we weren't sure how good they were going to be. In the last 2 weeks, people forget, like, they played Oregon before Herbert broke his collarbone and was out, and we'll get to that in a second. And then they played Washington, and so they've been, and then before that was USC, who they almost beat, you know. So they were in that game, and they turned it over six times in the fourth quarter and had a chance anyways. I think with 7 or 8 minutes left, it was still tied. I think it was a really good team, and now they're coming home after playing three teams that are at least similar, if not better, talent-wise, skill-wise, is Washington State, who's been fantastic. You have to give them that. And I actually bet, I mean, I'm not like anti-Washington State. I bet them against Oregon. I thought the drop-off from Herbert was really bad for Oregon at quarterback. And it was one of those where everyone was trying to find a way and a reason to bet Oregon as a dog at home to Washington State, who was off the USC win. And it was their first road game, I think, of true road game of the year. And I just sitting there all week looking at it, and I was like, this is going to be the game where we look back and be like, oh, that was just way too easy. And so luckily I bet Washington State, and we cashed, like, you know, I was hoping pretty easily. And so I like Washington State, and I have nothing against them at all. I do actually, because they cost me that Boise State, that money line round robin where they were down 21 in the fourth quarter to Boise. But I think that's also kind of telling. They were down 21 to, you know, to Boise in the fourth quarter. They haven't really beat, you know, anyone else until that USC game. And even then, you needed three offensive linemen on USC to get injured for the game by the second quarter. And at that point, the rest of the way, USC only scored one more touchdown. I think it was 7 points the last, like, 37 minutes or something after those injuries. So their offense clearly missed it. Sam Darnold struggled. So I don't know if I buy in fully to the Washington State being like this elite top, like legitimately, I think they're ranked like eighth or something I saw. That's too high. My power ratings wise, they're not in the top 10. But I really like Cal anyway. And they're a team that's played now three opponents that are at least as good as Washington State, if not better, because Oregon with Herbert's better than they were when they actually met Saturday. So I like Cal. I think I'm with you. You said you kind of like the spot too. And I thought 14 is what I recommended to clients as being, I guess, the buy point. So at 13.5, I wouldn't play it. My number is 11, I believe. But if it comes back up to 14 or whatever, I mean, 74% of the money supposedly is on Washington State, and it's moved down 13 at Pinnacle. So it's even – and Chris is 13. Those are like the two 13s, which maybe is a little more telling. So I think it's Cal, and you can just watch the screen for people – that are listening that don't get my stuff already. I think Cal snagging it if 14 pops back up is worthwhile.
All right, let's move to Saturday here, and we got a handful of games to check out for Saturday. And let's go to the ACC here, game 155-156, Florida State and Duke. Talk about this one in our pick six segment on Monday, but I think it's a good spot to talk about it here with you, Cheetah. Florida State's laying 6.5 here, and you and I have had the Duke discussion on this show a little bit. You know, what they did to Northwestern was very, very impressive. Next week, they had some issues with Baylor. Since then, I mean, they had the nice win over North Carolina, but North Carolina is just decimated by injuries this season. But the last two games for Duke, blown out by Miami at home, lost on the road to Virginia in a game that had a very significant line move last week. I don't know what to think of Florida State right now, and they're almost a touchdown favorite on the road in Durham. So break this one down for me. What do you see out of this game?
Yeah, this one, this is tough to break down. Let's start with Duke because I think they're the easiest to correctly rate or correctly expect to play a certain way. You went through a couple of their games. The Miami game, they lost 31-6, but that was really fluky. They did not lose by 25 points in the box score outside of the final score. It was, I think they were only minus 50 yards. They didn't even really turn it over much, but they found a way to move the ball like 40 to 60 yards and get to Miami's 40 to 50, you know, midfield to the 40 and just stall every time. That's when they stopped getting first down somehow right then. Or they'd take, you know, every time there was a sack, it was when they were in Miami territory, which put them out of field goal range or made it so it was 3rd and 17, you know, and then they end up having to punt. They only scored 6, but they dominated, I thought, offensively against a really, really good Miami team. what's even crazier, I think this is where I don't think Duke is. I mean, they're not bad. They went in Virginia. Remember, they crushed Boise on the road. This offense has just been awesome. And we started seeing it against UConn. And I've been tweeting about the quarterback, and I'm forgetting his name, like Bedkurt or something like that. He was just dropping dimes, and he's just been fire since. And they beat a really good Duke team at home, which I think is just more telling about where Virginia's at and the job Bronco Mendenhall has done there now. And I think it's his third season. So you think you just give Virginia credit. And there was a move against Virginia the morning of. I think they were 2-point favorites, and it went to, you know, Duke minus one. It seems like a big move through the zero and around ones into a two. It's not a super key move. You know, it's more significant to go from 2.5 to 3.5 for obvious reasons. So I wouldn't look too much into that. But, I mean, I think a lot of people, me included, were surprised Virginia was a favorite. But I'll tell you this. I have Virginia in this, like, stock market type league where you buy them before the season or during the season. You can buy and sell teams based on their win total and projected win totals. I bought Virginia before this year started, and I was planning on selling them against Duke, and then I didn't end up doing it. I just think this team's really, really solid. So I held on to Virginia. So I just don't think that's a dog on Duke that they lost on the road in Virginia. I think it only ended up being by one score. It was 21-21, and you know, Virginia scored last, I think, 28-21. So then you're looking at Florida State. You're like, oh, I know what to get from Duke here. I think Florida State is a black man, I think is the name of the backup quarterback that took over for Francois. The very first game he played ended up being that NC State game. He made one throw that I may have even talked about this on this show, but I've talked about it on other shows for sure. But he made one throw. It was a heave down the sideline. It was like a 40-yard, just like go up and get it. His receiver caught it. Outside of that, he missed everything. Like, and there was a specific throw in that game where it was one of those like read options where you take it from the running back where you could run it or throw, and he went back to throw, and the running back just kept going sideways and ran a flat. And the play was to fake the handoff to the running back. The defense thinks, oh, pass, 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 and then you throw it to the running back anyway. And it was like a flat pattern. It was like 4 yards from the running back. And I know this kid's young, and I know it was his first start, and it's Florida State. It's tough, a lot of pressure. But this running back's like 4 yards away, and he threw it at the running back's behind his feet at his ankles. I mean, by the time, because it was such a short pattern, like by the time the running back could realize it was behind him, like he didn't have time to adjust. It hit the ground. And he had other passes, like short little screen passes or out patterns. He was just missing everything. And I said to people that game, I was like, I'm not like a football scout, but this guy sucks. Like, he's not good at playing quarterback. Florida State's going to struggle. And so, you know, sure enough, against Miami if their defense didn't play so well, I mean, they would have probably gotten trucked anyway. And then both quarterbacks got hot in those last drives. It ended up being a fantastic game. I didn't bet the game. But I think, I mean, even Wake Forest, they got lucky on one. He threw it down the field, you know, in a tie game against Wake to win essentially the buzzer. I'm not sure they're just going to be very good at all year. And my number technically says, you know, against Duke, it should be 7, but I'm not surprised that it's a little lower now. I believe it's under 7. I should pull that up because I haven't seen for probably an hour and a half. I get to 6.5 or 7 here in town at a few spots. So, yeah, for me, I think the setup is really, really good where I'm not going to bet the game, and you're going to gain a lot, I think, from watching this, because we have a pretty good expectation of what Duke is. And if they're really pretty solid, which I think they are, I think this game is one they win, actually. If not, you know, at least keep it close, and we'll really see Florida State just kind of fall out in their season. Just, I mean, it already kind of is over. I don't remember the last time under Jimbo they only won 6 or 7 games, but I think that's what they're looking at this point. If Florida State went in and just won by like 21 or something like that, I think that would surprise me more than anything. And at that point, we need to reassess then where we're at with Florida State, because it is a young kid at quarterback who maybe starts improving or whatnot. So big game. I'm not sure if you like a side either direction, but I'm curious what I start hearing from people this week, because it's not one I think that I'll end up being able to bet at all.
No, I mean, my number on this game is 8 right now. And you know, I mean, you've had a chance to watch Blackman and actually see how he plays the position. I haven't had a chance to do that. So I've kind of been wondering all along, you know, have I made enough of an adjustment to Florida State with DeAndre Francois out? one of the things that's really hard about this game is, you know, and I think this is indicative of the line, is that Florida State just has that talent advantage. They have that athleticism advantage over Duke, but Duke is that scrappy. They're better in the underdog role. I mean, we kind of know that. We've sort of seen that, you know, as we've gone along here, not just throughout this season, but throughout the Cutcliffe era. And they're in that underdog role here against a talented but disjointed team. And this is a spot where I would be inclined to maybe look to go against my number if I had to have action on this game and take the Duke at 6.5. I think there is a 7 still out there somewhere, probably Bovada or something like that. It's actually at 5 dimes right now. But, you know, I mean, it does feel to me like one of those games where, like you said, you know, Duke could very well win this game. I don't think it surprises anybody. I mean, look, last week, they didn't do anything defensively, or they didn't do anything offensively against Virginia. But we talked about Bronco Mendenhall when they were going up to Boise and talked about that 3-3-5 and how it's a tough thing for a quarterback to look at. Virginia had 310 yards in that game last week on the Duke defense. And you just talked about with Benkert and the way that he's throwing the football around. I mean, this is why looking at box scores is so important, not just looking at, you know, the final scores, because I, like most other people out there, just kind of, I mean, I've had so much going on with the Indians games and all that type of stuff. I look at what they've done the last couple of games, 31-6 to Miami, 28-21 to Virginia, and I'm thinking, what's wrong with Duke? But then the way you broke it down, Cheetah, in terms of, you know, getting some eyes on these games and box score study, maybe there just isn't anything that wrong with Duke. Maybe the offense isn't great. I mean, that is a concern that you could have. But defensively, they've played just fine. And, you know, I mean, if Florida State isn't as proficient as they generally are on offense, and you're sitting there taking 6.5 or 7, not a bad spot to be in.
You know, it's one of those games, I think I maybe even talked about it here on your show, Adam, where we're talking about, people ask questions about my money lines a lot, because I posted on Twitter the first few weeks of the season, I post money line dogs that I bet, and I round robin them and stuff. And they're generally like weeks 1 through 3, because I think the non-conference schedule and just the fact that it's really in the season offers a lot more just wide variance of like anything could happen in certain games and certain teams with new coaching and this and that. This is one where, I mean, I don't bet too many more money lines once you're in week 7, but this is one where I definitely think, like, this is more of a flip than you would think for, like, a 7-point favorite. Like, that seems weird to say, because if it's a 7-point favorite, it's supposed to imply, you know, like a 70% win percentage. This is one where you can get Duke at 2-1 or even a little higher in a game that feels like can go either way, if that makes sense. So if I actually ended up putting any money on this, I think that's kind of the direction I would lean, is just betting Duke at the plus money. And if you're basically betting, is Florida State really just this bad? And, you know, it has Duke, if they've been better than their scores have shown, and that's why we're getting some value. So I do kind of like that angle. That just kind of came to me as you were breaking it down.
I didn't put this game on the list that I wanted to talk to you about, but as I'm looking at the odds screen here and going down by rotation number, I see Middle Tennessee State and UAB.
Oh, okay.
What?
I thought you were saying Michigan's just getting lit up right now. Michigan against Indiana is getting bet, so that's what I thought you were going with.
No, actually, but that is interesting to see that. That was a strange number to look at to begin with here early in the week. So, what the hell? We'll go back to that game then, 141-142, and let's talk about that line move here. And what do you think is the catalyst for this?
Well, you know, it opened, like, the win opener was above 7, and I know offshore the bet online one was above 7. So it came down through the 7. That's a pretty big move yesterday. It probably had a lot to do with Chris opening up under 7 and Pinnacle and stuff. So for me, my number, I believe, and you may know more than I do, which is bad, but I didn't bet Indiana games the last 2 weeks. Is Legault, is he injured or is he just benched for Ramsey officially? Do you know that for sure?
What I saw is that they opted to go with Ramsey. And he's been the guy. And what's unfortunate is that, I mean, last week they played Charleston Southern, who didn't complete a pass in the game. Ramsey's numbers look good, but, I mean, it's Charleston Southern. So, you know, I mean, I think it's tough. You're kind of walking into a bit of an unknown here, I think, in terms of him against a competent defense.
Yeah, absolutely. He's technically not their best passer, but he has a little more of a dual threat ability. He can run the ball. They benched Legault against Virginia when they were scoreless through, like, I think almost the entire first half. And Ramsey came in and was actually able to move the ball because of his legs. And then he was able to do that some against Penn State. I think Legault played in that game too. And then he got benched again and Ramsey came in. And then Ramsey just played the whole FCS game, which, like you said, what can you really take from that? So I'm intrigued by that, and I'm intrigued by the sense that Michigan, a team that all year and before the season people were talking about being down because they only have one defender back, and they still have the best defense in the country yards per play wise. They gave up, get this, and maybe changed on the last drive. I don't remember exactly, but Michigan State had one first down the entire second half. Think about that. You're down 4 points for the majority of the second half, and your opponent only gets one first down, but you couldn't actually win the game. And the reason was, I think Michigan turned it over 5 times. And so Michigan played a lot better game than that final score. And I took the dog. I bet plus 13.5 on Sparty, playing the numbers. And honestly, that matchup is always drama. It comes down to the final play, it feels like. But I think Michigan, that actually impressed me more that Michigan was in that game when they were -5 in turnovers, because their defense, despite getting put in bad spots, one first down the entire second half. Their offense just couldn't do anything. They kept killing them. Harbaugh, part of the blame, I think, making weird calls as far as putting who's the backup of Corn, I think, in the weird spots. I don't know if Spate's going to be healthy or going, but my number in this game is 9. And so I'm looking at betting Michigan. I was kind of curious to see where this is going to head, and I don't actually release my plays until I have like a daily set time at 5 o'clock Pacific time. So I can't, like, as we're on here, I'm seeing it move from 5.5 to 6. I couldn't, like, hurry and send it out or anything. I got to wait till 5. But I think Michigan's definitely a buy. It's kind of this weird perception that they're not good or something now because of that Michigan State game. But that was just, like, a really lopsided, weird game. And they still almost won anyways. And their defense was still fantastic. And now you're playing a similar quarterback who's, like, a dual-threat guy that doesn't throw very well, except probably against a worse defense. And you're not going to hopefully turn it over 5 times. So I don't know. I kind of like Michigan on the spot. It doesn't feel like a game at Indiana, similar to the Ohio State game. You know, they just find ways to lose these games. Even if it's close in the third or fourth quarter, Indiana just can never pull these ones out. So that's not why you'd be betting it. I'm betting it mostly because my number says to. But I saw it lighting up, and I thought it was interesting. So it's definitely worth a look to back the Wolverines inning.
No, it is interesting. I mean, my number is Michigan -8 here in this one. So from a line value standpoint, obviously when it was 5.5, that was a great grab with the 6 and the 7 out there. Now Michigan's side getting hit pretty hard. And I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's people thinking there's a look ahead to the game in Happy Valley next weekend on the 21st. I don't know if it's the fact that O'Korn's going again here because Spate's out for multiple weeks. I mean, I don't know. I honestly don't think that there's much of a power ratings difference between Spate and O'Korn anyway. So I mean, it was one of those lines that was pretty surprising to look at. I mean, Indiana really hasn't done anything that would get much respect out of me, but it felt like this line was giving them respect, and it was one of those ones that I kind of raised my eyebrows at a little bit, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. Now it's up to 6.5 at Pinnacle, so, I mean, someone decided just to start firing at it, kind of to hell with it, back Michigan, and it is what it is. If Indiana could finally get a win against a top-tier opponent, then – they deserve it, but I don't buy into Ramsey necessarily, and I still think I'm so impressed by this Michigan defense. And it's a Harbaugh defense. You shouldn't be too impressed, but everyone harped on him. And I kept saying, don't worry, like, his recruits, like, he has these guys. One starter's probably not a big deal. Well, they've even surpassed my expectations. But, I mean, if they end up, I think it's like 3.3 yards per play, which is a full, like, half yard better than the next best team in the country. That's how much better they've been defensively than anybody else. And I think it went down, even though they lost the game, their defense, they only held Michigan State to like 2.8 or 9 yards per play. So their defense is just so good. I don't know. I'm really intrigued to see how Indiana responds ultimately. Probably like the under some, but it's come down from 48 to 45.5, 46. So anyways, we can move on to the next game. I know you talked about Middle Tennessee State and UAB. It's not up a ton of spots. Probably just because the stock still is just like always questionable every week. So their lines are only up at a few books generally each week.
Yeah, what I really wanted to ask you about here was the UAB side, because this is a team that, I mean, they haven't played football for 2 years. You know, you give Bill Clark a ton of credit for sticking around, for finding a way to go out and get players, whether it was transfers or get somebody to actually go to the university to play football as they were bringing the program back. I just wanted to get your thoughts on how you adjust a team like that, because – coming into the season, we had so much unknown. They're 3-2 right now. They're halfway to a bowl game. They just beat Louisiana Tech, who, you know, is generally a pretty good Conference USA team. So that's really what I wanted to get your thoughts on, is how you're adjusting UAB as the season goes along.
Yeah, I mean, you adjust based on, you know, things we've talked about before, but I mean, their market closes and then their actual, not necessarily results and the score results, but like looking at, they're very efficient offensively. They've been a really good football team. And so you have to kind of adjust for that as well. And so for me, yeah, I've definitely adjusted with them. I had money on them the last 2 weeks that was smaller money. It wasn't like a personal play I made, but we're kind of tailing some other guys that really like UAB. And they almost beat North Texas outright the week before on the road. Then they beat La Tech outright at home as what ended up being, I think, closing around 10-ish. And North Texas was, they were almost a full two touchdown underdogs and lost 43-46. So they've been fantastic. I mean, you have to give them credit. My number, if, you know, without stock still, I have Middle Tennessee State -6 and it's 5, 4.5. There's a 5.5 at Westgate. I think it's probably about right, but I'm not surprised to see it shaded down a little bit from where my number is at 6, just because UAB's been so hot.
Yeah, that's fair. I think my number is 7.5, and I'm hoping Stockstill is able to play just because he's a fun guy to watch. And I mean, I'd like to see him healthy because I think he's got possible NFL future as a backup quarterback somewhere. I mean, he is a coach's kid, so that doesn't, you know, that doesn't hurt. I'm sure he'd be a nice guy holding the clipboard there and making some play calls, but. You know, I mean, he just, like you said, hey, he hasn't stayed healthy. And this Middle Tennessee team is one where when he's not playing, it's not like it just affects the offense. It affects the defense in a big way, too. So, you know, again, every week you pretty much just kind of play that waiting game when it comes to Middle Tennessee State. Let's move on to a game, a bigger game here, a bigger conference game. 173-174 on the board, Utah and Southern Cal. Man, I got to say, like, I understand the line. I totally get where it is. And, in fact, I have my personal number a little bit higher than where this line is. But I never have any interest in going against Kyle Whittingham as a double-digit dog.
Yeah, my number is actually 14.5. I was hoping the initial opener I think I first saw yesterday was maybe 11. And it kind of just been creeping up ever since, 13, 12.5 now. I was hoping maybe it'd be like a 10. I was going to lay USC. I will say I don't disagree with you generally. I mean, they find ways to cover and win 9 games a year no matter what. So you just have to credit Whittingham for that. I mean, even against Stanford, you know, they got a lot of the steam. They were playing the backup quarterback, Troy Williams, who is horrible. And they still only lost by 3 again, you know, against a really good Stanford team. So, and they found a way to cover just about every number unless you bet +3 late on Saturday. So, I can't disagree with you in that regard. I'll say I think USC last year on the road, and this is Darnold's the only game Darnold lost last year as a starter, and I believe it was his first start actually. But, and I took +4. USC was at, or maybe it was, I think it was +3 or 3.5, and they were at Utah, and they were up 17 with like 6 minutes left. And they just took the foot off the pedal, and also the defense just started playing prevent like a lot of teams do. And sure enough, in 6 minutes, Utah went touchdown, 3-and-out, touchdown, onside recovery, and at the buzzer, literally with zeros on the clock, I think, or 1 second, and that's what it was. It was 1 second on the clock for a touchdown, so they still had to kick the extra point. So then they went up and they won by 4, and I think the +3.5, +3 is all lost with USC. I don't think that's like, ultimately when guys talk about like revenge games and this and that, you know, the Cowboys-Packers game, that wasn't why I bet the Cowboys yesterday, for example, because they lost to the Packers in the playoffs, and it's a revenge game. But a lot of guys probably have that as a selling point. For me, the number was short. I bet -1.5. And sure enough, I think it got to 3. So it should have been a higher number to begin with. But this is another example where, you know, I'm not going to be betting USC because they have this revenge from blowing that 17-point lead in Salt Lake City last year. And ultimately, that was the one that cost them you know, a chance at winning the Pac-12 and potentially going to the playoff, because their losses, I guess, before that was like Alabama and it was the Washington game, but they would have had the rematch in the Pac-12 title and beat, because since they beat Colorado, they would have had the tiebreaker there if they had not lost to Utah. They would have maybe been in the actual playoff or at least the Pac-12 title game. And so that changed a lot. So, I mean, they're probably thinking about it. It's Darnold's only loss last year. And they just choked it away, and there's a lot of guys back from that team. And so it feels like one of those where they're going to try to just run it up and punish Utah from the get-go, and they're going to be frustrated about it. So for me, it'd be USC or nothing, but mostly just because the number is short. I think mine's – I said 14.5, and I'll pull it up. Yeah, 14.5. So there's some value still, I think, on the USC side. I was hoping – I kind of got greedy and, it didn't take the early 11s. But, you know, I'll probably end up passing on the game, or it'll be a smaller play for me on the Trojans.
Yeah, I got this one even a little bit higher than that. I actually have it in the 17 range. And I remember that game that you're talking about with Utah, because I was on USC in that one, both plus the 3.5 or 3 and the money line. So I definitely remember that one very vividly. Go ahead.
Yeah, just real quick, I want to make a point. Your 17 is actually probably a lot closer, assuming Huntley's out again. Like, if Troy Williams is quarterback, then I would adjust a couple points for my 14.5. So that's worth watching for people listening. I just wanted to make that point. If Troy Williams is ends up being the starter again for Utah, then I think Adam 17 is a much better number than 14.5 would be. So, I mean, he's a couple-point drop-off for sure. And, I mean, he was the starter all last year, and they weren't very good, and now he gets another chance against Stanford, and he was horrifyingly bad. And so now going into USC, I don't trust him at all. So I think 17 maybe even is correct if Troy Williams is the starter again. So just worth watching that throughout the week.
Well, and I think part of it, too, is maybe people have downgraded USC a little bit, because after that Stanford blowout, they struggled with Texas, they struggled with Cal, they lost to Washington State. And I think people have kind of, you know, knocked them down a little bit. But look, Texas is a pretty good football team. They're very athletic. They've got plenty of talent. That's not really anything that bothers me too much, especially coming off of the Stanford win. Cal, we talked about them already. Cal defensively is a very, very good team. And then going up to Pullman and losing to Washington State, like, that doesn't really surprise me all that much either. I mean, it's a tough place to play, and Washington State is a pretty good team. So I sort of feel like maybe people have soured a little bit too much on the Trojans. You know, maybe they expected too much from Sam Darnold, who, yeah, he's thrown 9 interceptions. He's also completed 65% of his passes, has 12 touchdowns, can make all the throws that he needs to. You know, he's just had some issues throwing into double coverage and some tip passes and things of that sort. But it kind of feels to me like people are selling their USC stock because they were a trendy pick to win it all, and they don't look like a team capable of winning it all right now in the minds of some. And at that point, you know, I think that's when you kind of get a buy sign on a team like that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, USC at Washington State, I believe, and they were up like 17-7, and then in the second half, and then their offensive linemen just started going down. It was the weirdest thing, and all three at halftime were announced out for the game. And they were just, and after that, Darnold was running for his life. And, you know, you've seen it kind of throughout the year when they've had some injuries where he just doesn't have enough time. He's thrown a few into double coverage or tip passes and this and that. And they've just, I mean, I'm not sure exactly who from that set of that trio of three guys is still out or, you know, has returned and played last week against Oregon State. I imagine it was Oregon State. If they needed to rest, they rested. But it's worth eyeing in on those offensive linemen injuries as well. Throughout the week, if they play, then I think their offense is a lot better, or at least the backups now have a couple games of experience too under their belt. Because throwing into, you know, on the road to Washington State, they almost won it anyway, which is in a sense kind of impressive.
All right, let's talk about that Navy Memphis game here. 193-194. Memphis, a 4-point favorite after they hung 70 on UConn last week, and that was one of the easiest winners I've had this year, was playing Memphis in a bounce back role there, and Riley Ferguson just put up. They weren't even video game numbers. I don't even know what you want to call them. But they draw a much more difficult opponent here this week in Navy. And this is a really fun game for me to break down. I love the AAC in general. But you've got this high-powered Memphis offense. You've got this marginal rush defense against Navy, who wants to burn up as much clock as possible. We know what they're going to do with the triple option. They're very, very disciplined. A lot of things to unpack about this game.
Yeah, this is one, like I mentioned earlier in the show, I thought Memphis at -3 was a good bet. My number 7, and, you know, Anthony Miller, I think, is the receiver's name. I had like 4 touchdowns, I think, last week in that game against UConn. Against UCLA, he had maybe 3. He's a baller. I hope he plays at the next level because he's really, really good, and obviously Riley Ferguson is as well. And, I don't know, Navy, they're just the team every year, and they don't really cost me a lot of money, at least yet. But they just win no matter who comes back and returns. They just find ways to win. And even last week, they blew a huge lead. They're up like 21 on Air Force. And then they were down 4 at the end of the game. They blew it, and then they just, even in a minute left in an option offense, they went down the length of the field basically and won it at the buzzer. I mean, I think there was 15 seconds left or something, and, you know, they won by 3. So they just have so much of that, whatever it is, like extra, you know, it's probably got to give credit to the coach, but they just find ways to win those games. And they always go over the season win totals and that type of thing. I don't, you know, my numbers are pretty good on the Navy games every week, and now it's short, and it might just be because Navy's been, you know, winning every week themselves. I will say this, Memphis last year in a chance to repeat, I think go back to the ACC title, the AAC title. They lost by 14 on the road at Navy, so it's a little bit of a little bonus, like revenge from that game. And Memphis themselves obviously still trying to win the conference, and they lost to who might end up being the best team in the conference, Central Florida. And but outside of that, they've, you know, they've won their other games. They beat UCLA. I mean, they're still in a really good spot. And this Navy one's big, and then they go on the road to play Houston 5 days later, by the way, and that's kind of an interesting spot when they have to play Houston on Thursday night on the road, just right after this Navy game. But yeah, I think Memphis is the right side. The number's still a little short. They are the better overall team. Ultimately, it comes down to, can they slow the option? And I think last year they gave up, I think the score was 42-28. I think they lost by 14. So they gave up 42. They didn't slow down the option very well. What's nice is this year their offense is so good, and it's not like the Navy defense is very good either. So, I mean, if they gave up 42 to Navy, I think you're still thinking Memphis might win the game anyways. And if they're able to hold Navy to, say, 31 range, you know, then they're definitely winning this game, I think. So I like the Memphis side, and that's one that I think I mentioned earlier as well. I think -3 is like the tip of my buying point. But if it comes down, it's touched 3.5 a couple spots, but mostly fours. But watch out. If it hits 3 again, I think that's definitely worth a bet.
Navy had 447 rushing yards in that game last year. They also had 3 completions for 85 yards. So, you know, just a lot of big plays there for the Navy offense. And here's an angle that I don't, you know, we don't generally talk about it because we sort of think that the service academies are immune to some of these situational spots because they are so disciplined, you know, because of the way that the program is run. But man, I got to think coming off of basically a walk-off win, you know, with their, I mean, their win expectancy dropped to about 5% in a game against a fellow service academy with the Commander-in-Chief trophy, you know, implications there. I mean, if you're ever going to find a spot where Navy is going to be prone to a letdown, it's got to be this one.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, you look back, they barely beat Tulane, and Tulane's a much improved team this year too. I want to say also, I mean, Cincinnati, they only ended up winning by 10. I mean, they gave up 32 to a really, really bad Cincinnati team. And Memphis, it just, I mean, 45 to Air Force. It just seems like their defense, and especially now if it's a nice letdown spot like you mentioned, and with UCF on deck coincidentally, it just feels like a game Memphis should be able to put up as many points as they need to find a way to get there. I mean, it could turn in to like that UCLA game where it's just back and forth Memphis and whoever has the ball last. I just have a sense that Memphis is going to be better defending the option this time around. And on top of it, they're just so good and maybe so average or below average offensively that we should be okay here. So if you got some of that -3, I think it actually opened 2.5 at BetOnline. I think that's the right side. I think it's a good bet.
Well, and of course, too, when you think about it last year, they had a rookie head coach in Mike Norvell. They had a defensive coordinator in Chris Ball, who was a co-DC at Washington State for a while. You know, but, and I mean, this is a guy that had never really done too much with the option. So when you've got a coaching staff that hasn't seen it, it's really hard to prepare for. So, you know, Memphis should be better this time around. At least that would be the thought that it would look to go with here. All right, let's go to game 207-208 here in the SEC, Auburn and LSU. So everyone writes off LSU, then they go and beat Florida. Well, maybe Florida's not that good of a football team, but maybe LSU is a team that we don't want to write off yet. Auburn's in Baton Rouge is a 6.5-point favorite now. Looks like they're the preferred side early in the week.
Yeah, I mean, this is one where, like, before the year, you never would have guessed Auburn was laying a touchdown at LSU. It actually was 8 at the win. And I'll tell you this, I still didn't have it in me to back LSU. It kind of smells like that Georgia-Tennessee game where the number's way too high, but the road team's just that much better this year. And, you know, Georgia crushed Tennessee. And Auburn, they only ended up winning by 21 against Ole Miss, but they gave up in the second half. I think they lost the second half by like 17. They were winning the game by like 38 at one point. Before that, they crushed Mississippi State, won by 39. They beat Missouri on the road by 37 or something like that, 30, maybe even 40-something. They've been really, really good. And so that's part of it is they've just crushed 3 SEC teams in a row. And on the flip side, I will say LSU, I mean, that game is going into overtime or another team wins if Florida just makes an extra point. They missed the extra point. It's the only reason LSU won 17-16. Florida seemingly tied the game in the fourth quarter, and then they missed, and then that was it. That was over. So Florida maybe wins that game in overtime or something. LSU still lost to Troy at home. People like this. I mean, that was why people were betting LSU, because they were at 1 point, 6.5 point dogs, and that was way too high against Florida. But the fact that they still were about picked in the end of it is still pretty telling. I mean, before the year, that would have been something I had LSU still pretty good favorites in. So, I mean, they've been adjusted down some. Whether they deserve to be 6.5, 7 point dogs to Auburn, probably not from a numbers perspective. But how much stock do you want to put in what Auburn's done the last few weeks? The fact that now they only gave up 14 points on the road to Clemson tells a lot about their defense, and their offense is getting better and better now the last month. I mean, since that Clemson game, this is the game where they win. I personally, they host Georgia and host Alabama later in the year, but Auburn's one of my main futures from before the season. It was the only one I bet that wasn't two super long shots. And they're 32-1, and then I bought more after Clemson at 75-1. So I'm an Auburn fan going forward, and I just think that they are that much better this year than LSU. And so I couldn't end up even taking LSU at +8. I won't be laying it with Auburn either. I think it's a fine number at this point. But I think we'll learn a lot about where Auburn's at. If they end up winning this game by pretty handily on the road, then that Georgia game, November 11th, and then potentially that Alabama game, November 25th, for the division and possibly SEC title and a playoff spot. I mean, those are massive. Those are going to be, game day should be at Georgia, Auburn, if not both. I mean, this is just going to be a fantastic little 3-week stretch there in November for the SEC.
I actually should have been looking at this in terms of the Golden Nugget games of the year lines while we were going through. And just to circle back to the games we have touched on here, Washington State was a 4-point favorite against Cal over the summer. LSU was a 7-point favorite here in this game against Auburn, and then USC was a 20-point home favorite against Utah. So give you a little bit of a frame of reference there in terms of how these teams have dropped off or risen up here so far this year. By the way, another one, Oklahoma State was only a 7-point favorite for Baylor. That number is 25.5 or something like that now. But it is interesting to see, how far LSU has fallen in everybody's mind here. And Auburn was a team that had some hype coming into the season. And now we've got, a 14-point swing basically in this line. I do think that that's pretty telling. And you could also make a case that maybe it's too much. But when you look at the body of work for LSU, it does start to make some sense. And like you said, I mean, we look at that Auburn game and we're kind of like, what's wrong with this offensive line? What's wrong with Jarrett Stidham? What's wrong with this? What's wrong with that? Maybe we were focusing on the wrong thing. Maybe we should have focused on how Auburn gave up 14 points and – Clemson's defensive line is just ridiculous. And now all of a sudden, Auburn is just hanging numbers on everybody. And, it kind of speaks to something we've been talking about a little bit here on the shows of late is the way that you have to evaluate past performances, based on what we know about these teams as we get more data points.
Yeah, definitely. I liked Auburn in that game. I took them +7, 7.5 game of the year against Clemson. For the very reason that I thought Clemson without Deshaun Watson, new quarterback, was going to take some time. And sure enough, that whole angle really, and plus I think my number was like 4.5 or something. But that angle actually backfired because I think it was Jarrett Stidham in this Auburn offense adjusting to incorporating him as a passing threat, which they just haven't had for a few years. And then also the run game, which I think they blitzed the Ole Miss on the ground. I just had it on in the corner. So I didn't watch the game very closely, but I mean, they've just been able to run the ball now really well, really effectively. And, I think ultimately it was them kind of just getting their groove and they might have just hit stride. And I think defensively, they've just been really impressive. And the Ole Miss points, like the 20 they scored in the second half, were all, I think, in the fourth quarter and all just kind of after Auburn gave up 38. So, I mean, maybe even was backups in for Auburn for all I know. I wasn't watching closely enough. So, I mean, it's been so impressive. This is probably I guess it comes down to this. LSU barely, we were saying, is it time to write them off or not? I mean, barring a missed extra point, they maybe lose to Florida too after losing to Troy. They just are a team that hasn't really shown much at all outside of the BYU win, which is looking like nothing anyways now at this point. I think Auburn's supposed to be the favorite. It's hard to say, especially looking at the game of the year stuff. And if I just, I honestly, I just have a lot of money on Auburn futures, but if they can if they can actually just show me that they beat LSU on the road easily, like say they win by 17 or 21 or something, then I think, I mean, Auburn, you have to give them the fact that they're this big of a favorite. I think the market is respecting them, but then, you know, just to see them actually just do it then and cover even this number on the road at LSU and Baton Rouge, I mean, they're here, they might be here to stay. And, you know, there's probably some people that have just been back in Auburn each week. And I know the Ole Miss number, it came down to when you actually bet it, when Ole Miss scored at the end. Some covered, some didn't. But they crushed Missouri. They crushed Mississippi State. I have a feeling Auburn might just be really, really good, similar to Georgia earlier this year where we were kind of all underrating them. And so a couple weeks back, actually, when I said I added Auburn 75-1, I added Georgia 25-1 because they play each other on November 11th. And I was like, the winner of that game is going to be in the SEC title game potentially. And so I had to take both. So it's kind of like a combined 50-1 shot on one of those teams. Maybe I'm just talking up Auburn because of that, but I really, since before the year, just been high on this team. And I think this is one of the games that they'll hopefully prove that, you know, they're here to stay.
Two Pac-12 After Dark games on Saturday. Oregon and Stanford is one of them, and this is a game that would look a lot more interesting if Justin Herbert was able to play, especially with Jim Leavitt and the fact that Oregon is getting a bit better defensively. But, I mean, obviously they don't play a similar style to Stanford, so not a great X's and O's game. But it's the other game late in the Pac-12 that I want to talk about, Washington and Arizona State. Now, Washington's a 17-point favorite. Bookmaker and DSI have popped up to 17.5 here. Arizona State is a team that you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago, I think. It was probably prior to the Oregon game, or maybe it was before the Stanford game. But this is a team that I feel like I just have no pulse on whatsoever. I mean, they had that close win over New Mexico State to open the year. Turns out New Mexico State's a pretty decent Group of Five team. Lost at home to San Diego State. Well, San Diego State beat Stanford this year, so the Aztecs are pretty good. On the road at Texas Tech, lost by a touchdown, but as we see this week in the Texas Tech-West Virginia line, people like Texas Tech. Maybe they're a team that we kind of undervalued a little bit coming into the season. Washington has played a cast of mostly nobodies until they blew out Cal last week. Colorado going, or you know, that Colorado win was impressive, but Colorado's not the same team that they were last year, and you know, there were some different things about that game, a Pac-12 title rematch and all that type of stuff. But this is a game where, I don't know, I feel like Washington's going to be in a dogfight here. No pun intended, since they're the Huskies, but something about this game is odd to me.
Yeah, I think we may have talked about the Oregon-Arizona State game for sure. I ended up backing Arizona State, and I don't know if it was your show or another show, or I think it might have been a different one, but they were asking what your favorite money line dog of the week was, and I said Arizona State. It was like +525 and actually cashed it. Maybe I mentioned it on your show too. I remember people like thanking us or something in Twitter notifications after. But they're a team I like actually. And the reason I'd really bet it is they had been playing like San Diego State and these teams where they're not great defensively. And Oregon ultimately had played teams that were really bad offensively. And I was like, you know, Oregon's going to get their points against Arizona State. But the number was like 2.5 touchdowns or something. That Arizona State was getting, or it was at least 14. And I was like, you know, Arizona State scores well enough, and Oregon just hasn't seen very good offenses. They're going to be able to just score with Oregon no matter what. I mean, this should come down to kind of whoever has the ball last. And it basically did. Actually, I think Arizona State actually blitzed them early and held on to the lead at the end. But I have to say, this Washington defense has been even better than last season. And they haven't played anyone yet. But holding Cal, I mean, Cal, when they did score, was actually on a fumble six. It was their defense that scored last week. Cal didn't score a single time. They tried to get on the board offensively. I don't actually know if you're following this game. You're probably asleep. The spread closed 28.5. Down 31, Cal ran their last play just against the backups against Washington. And with like 18 seconds left, and they were letting it go down. And Wilcox hurries and calls a timeout with 1 second left. No joke, 1 second, down 31, just to kick a field goal to try and get on the board or maybe cover because he knew the spread. It also was factoring into the second half, which was 24, and I had been under, and it was sitting at 21. So I was like, oh, great. I thought I had won because it was over. They were just letting the clock run. They called timeout, and then on the snap, he hikes it over the field goal kicker, the holder's head, and it goes back like backwards like 30 yards, and then the game ended. So it was a really weird like end of the game, but my point of bringing that up was it's a funny finish if you were up late watching Pac-12 After Dark. But it also was a game that I think Washington was really impressive defensively, and they have been, you know, even against, you know, it was Colorado, and they played Fresno State. Fresno State scored on them because Fresno State's really, really solid this year offensively. But I've had to adjust Washington up in my ratings from last year, which is kind of surprising to me. And I just had to do it. All my numbers have been falling a little short. Even this one, I only have it at 15.5, but I don't think I can take 17.5 for Arizona State just because Washington's been covering and been covering as big favorites just because their defense has been so good. And so Arizona State, a team that we talked about, I think they even have a bye to prepare for this game. They can score with like an Oregon. I don't know if they can just score on Washington like they would against a weaker defense. So you can't really, I guess, go with that same, that same angle in this particular matchup just because defensively they're not very good. They're going to get scored on. And Washington defensively is not giving up much more than, you know, 17-24 maybe max in this game. So I just have to stay away. The total is really high. It's like 62. I had it a little lower. Might be one I end up looking at betting just because Arizona State on top of that in 2 weeks. Generally, the extra bye, I think, benefits the defense having 2 weeks to game plan for Washington for one. But then sometimes offensively having 2 weeks off can kind of, you know, build some rest or whatever, not having played an actual game action. And so maybe early on, Arizona State can't move the ball. So I may look at betting under in this game more so than the side.
Last thing I'll ask you about here, with regards to Washington. So they play Arizona State this weekend. They're a three-score favorite. They're a favorite of 17.5. Then they have a bye. The rest of their season, they host UCLA, host Oregon, at Stanford on a short week Friday night, host Utah, and then the Apple Cup against Washington State on November 25th. What do you think about this Washington team going forward? I mean, they are 6-0. They're covering big numbers. Haven't really played anybody the caliber of the final five teams that they're going to play. So how do you rate the Huskies going forward? I mean, is this a team? There's probably not much futures value on them given the fact they were in the playoff last year. But do you see a buy point for them in any futures at any point coming up here?
You know, I'm not sure what the actual price is for them. So it'd be dependent on that, I guess. I haven't looked. Just because I'm like you, I think I've assumed that it hasn't been one that was really worth betting. So my guess is no. But it's a very interesting schedule in that you could argue, depending on how you rate Arizona State versus Colorado, but you could argue that the six toughest games they play are these next six versus the first six were the easiest six. And at least these final five are the toughest. So I'm with you. I think it's a very interesting spot. The interesting the way the schedule breaks down, you know, there's no, I guess, like actual quantifiable stat or data for this, but you know, typically I think a team that's played a lot of lesser talented opponents, whatever that would actually be, you know, it's this worst teams over and over. This would be my data set. I would tell someone who says this is bogus. The LeBron Eastern Conference LeBron, whether he was with the Heat, the Cavs before the Heat, the Cavs since the Heat, he is 0-for in game ones of the finals because he walks through an Eastern Conference that's so much worse than the West. And even in the finals that they beat the Thunder 4-1, the game they lost, game one against the Thunder crushed them. There's this sense of like a wake-up call when you just play teams that are much better than what you've been playing for 2 months. You know, in the NBA final sake, it was maybe more like a month, but for Washington's sake, it's literally going to be 2 months of bad teams. And then they have to play, and you're not going to say UCLA is great, Oregon's great, but Stanford's really pretty good. And in Utah, Washington State, I mean, this is a really tough stretch. And, you know, their wake-up call, it's hard to imagine it'll be against UCLA at home or Oregon without Herbert now. They kind of maybe get a nice little build-up before they have to play Stanford on the road. But I am a little bit, not concerned, but interested in seeing what the line will be against UCLA. And then, you know, even Oregon or even Stanford come that week in, I think it'll be November, just because I think there's a sense of needing to play up to your competition and needing time to adjust. And then the LeBron teams, the Eastern Conference teams, I mean, he's always come back. If they were the better team, they won the series more often than not if he needed to, but always game ones in the finals. Like he just never wins them. And I think it's not necessarily him. It's just the whole team just played worst teams in the East all April, May, and you get to the finals, and it just takes some time. And I think we might see that for Washington. And it's a concept I actually talked about with someone before the year started because we thought this Washington schedule was so intriguing, just the way it's set up. Unfortunately, UCLA is not as good as I think a lot of people – we're hoping they are offensively, but defensively they're so bad. I don't think this will end up being a weird spot. I was hoping, though, UCLA would be a fun team to back and maybe even upset Washington. I'm not so sure anymore when it ultimately comes down to it.
Right now, looking at Bet Online, Washington's 14-1 to win the national championship. And part of the problem is, I mean, on the surface, you know, with how good this team is, that might not look like that bad of a price. But the problem is, because their schedule is so backloaded, if they lose a game late in the year, it's hard for them to make up ground. I mean, we talked about Ohio State losing to Virginia Tech a couple of years ago. You know, that was in the second week of the season. So they had time to repair their image. The problem with Washington is if they lose a game, it's going to be late, and then they don't have time to do that.
Well, and it's in the main point, I think, also on top of that, is that the two most likely losses will be on the road at Stanford or the Washington State game at this point. And both of those, if they lose one of those and the other teams only end up with one loss, the other teams will have the tiebreaker because they're in the same division. So on top of the fact that it's a late loss, Washington could kind of recover if they got with one loss to the Pac-12 title and beat USC, you know, maybe they get to the playoff anyway. But if it's a loss late that keeps them out of the Pac-12 title game, then for sure that's it. So yeah, for like 14-1 at that point is completely dead. So part of that betting that number, I think, is dependent on where Stanford ends up, because they, you know, one of their losses with the San Diego State doesn't even matter in the Pac-12 standings. Their only loss could be USC. And if they beat Washington at home, boom, there you go, Stanford. You know, after beating Utah, one of their other tougher games, you know, they're in the Pac-12 title game over Washington, or even Washington State, who ends up maybe upsetting them to end the year in the rivalry game for the Apple Cup. So yeah, it's definitely an intriguing number. I would say 14 off the top of my head. I haven't actually run numbers, which I could, and we could shoot a tweet out or something. But 41 does seem a little high. So BetOnline offering 14. Shop around. I would have guessed maybe in town it's more like, you know, 10-1 at the most. Maybe offshore just has a couple better prices.
Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com also owns Podcast U. Whatever you want to plug here, feel free. Go right ahead.
Thanks, Adam. I appreciate you having me back on. Yeah, if you're interested in my actual college picks I give out, you can go to WagerTalk.com and get everything there. PodcastU.Vegas has a lot of like audio clips breaking down every game that I don't give out to clients. If you're just interested in all, I mean, a lot of the stuff with me, Adam and I just went through, I do that for every single game and give out my numbers and just talk through what I expect to see in that particular matchup. And this week I'm going to start doing NBA team previews, which will include all my like season win totals and futures bets and props and stuff for the NBA season, which starts next week. So I'm going to start hammering those out this week. So you can go over there and check it out. And, yeah, I think that's it, man. I appreciate you again letting me come on, and hopefully we get some wins this week in the Super Contest.
Yeah, man, I hope so. And next week on the show, thanks for bringing up the NBA. We'll make sure that we carve out a little bit of time for the NBA here on the show as well. We'll talk college football. We'll also do some NFL or some NBA. Then, of course, NFL later in the week with Cheetah for the Super Contest segment as well. So, Cheetah, good to have you back on the program, man. I'll talk to you again later in the week.
Absolutely. Take it easy.
Really great segment there with Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com. Not a big surprise. He's always great when he's on the air, and I'm really glad to have to have him back here on the program this week. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll hear from Brian Leonard, also from WagerTalk.com, and Wes Reynolds for our Wednesday Wagering with Wes Reynolds segment. Do some more college football and some NFL stuff there with those guys. Maybe touch on the NBA with Wes a little bit as well. On Thursday's show, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com and Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Friday, we'll bring Cheetah back on again for the Super Contest Selection segment, and then Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the Odds Report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.